Hey, good morning. You're listening to Breakfast Bites, and I'm Felicia King. Today's show, I'm going to be doing a follow-up on a prior podcast about the particular topic of tax preparers. So the IRS, you know, authorized, certified tax preparers, and how you as a consumer of those services need to be aware of what's happening in that space, because I think that it affects you immensely. And that's true if you are a business or just an individual consumer. So let's get started on that. The prior podcast I did on this particular topic was relating to how you can assess a prospective tax preparer that you may be seeking to utilize, and the types of things that you could ask them to produce for you, and why. And really, in the grand scheme of things, I would consider a tax preparer who has those things ready to go and who are just automatically offering that information straight up on their website publicly. I would call that a competitive advantage, you know? So in terms of if you happen to be a tax preparer and you want to have a competitive advantage, then I would strongly suggest that you go visit that, revisit that prior show, and think about getting that implemented for yourself. Okay, so let's now talk about what the rest of this is about. I'm going to do a deeper dive into what's called the FTC safeguards rule, and really the IRS regulations around this topic. In June, so next month, there's going to be enforcement starting for compliance with the FTC safeguards rule. So the IRS, for several years now, I mean, this has gone back to at least 2019, at least. I think it actually started in 2018. But the IRS released in 2019 a paper that basically said tax professionals who file on behalf of businesses or consumers, so basically anybody who has a tax preparer ID number with the IRS, needs to be compliant with new regulations. And these new regulations are bluntly things that probably should have been around since the beginning of computers, certainly since the beginning of people utilizing computers to do tax preparation and online tax filing. There was another prior show I did where I was talking about a significant breach that occurred due to tax preparers utilizing these online tax filing websites without having proper network layer security in place. So that's related to this, and I want to just cover that again for a little tiny bit here to get you to understand that these new IRS regulations and the enforcement action for that is really a bare minimum, right? It's the floor. It's not best practices. It's not the ideal. It is a floor. Okay, so if we look just at this one simple, I'll give you two simple examples. One has to do with encryption of the data, and the second one has to do with network layer security controls. Okay, if we look at this particular example where a huge percentage of websites, it was something in excess of 90% of the websites that were utilized for online tax filing by tax preparers. Okay, I'm not talking about like consumer services for self-help here, which really that should also be secure. Ultimately, what happened is that the people who make these websites, they themselves have issues. And part of the issues that they have is they're all filled with, you know, analytics and marketing driven people who want, and web developers who want to track use of the site and analytic, and they they want to, you know, cross sell to customers and show targeted advertisements and all kinds of ridiculous things that have no correlation with something that is, in effect, the same level of privacy and confidentiality as what should be like online banking confidentiality and security. So fundamentally, we've got a problem where the web developers and the marketing people at these companies that make this online tax filing software, they were embedding the Facebook Metapixel tag, and they were doing it the wrong way. And then what happened was, as people would do online filing, then whether, you know, tax preparers or consumers, didn't matter who, then a bunch of very, very sensitive, confidential, personally identifiable information, including, you know, income, social security numbers, addresses, names, marital status, children, names of children, I could go on and on and on. All of that stuff was basically breached. And it was breached because it was sent to Facebook. Okay, so that would not have ever happened if appropriate network layer security was in place. Let me explain this. In the context that a business's network and systems are managed by a competent security professional such as myself or my team, we would look at that situation and say, look, you're doing online banking, you're doing accounting, you're doing payroll, you're doing tax filing and tax preparation services for businesses and individuals. You're accessing things like 401ks, benefits packages, medical plans, you know, because you're going to have somebody who's doing payroll, they're probably doing like benefits package management as well. Fundamentally, this is all a specific security zone profile of confidential data. Okay. Confidential data and Facebook don't go together. Okay. Like Facebook is the antithesis of confidential data. Okay. These two things don't mix together. So what's the appropriate course of action? Well, the appropriate course of action is to construct at the network layer and at the endpoint protection layer a web content filtering and a content filtering policy in general that does not make it so that those computers doing those sensitive activities even have the opportunity to interact with Facebook. Okay, that's the correct thing to do. And that is what a CISO would do, is look at that situation and say, gee, how are we going to do appropriate risk management, which we have a fiduciary responsibility to protect customer data? Okay, so how are we going to do that risk management? Well, I can't make an argument that somebody should be looking at Facebook and doing tax preparation on the same computer. No, that certainly not in a professional capacity. You start doing things in a professional capacity and you start charging people for services and say that, you know, you're a professional. You need to do that competently, not willy-nilly in a way that's convenient for you, but not legally defensible in terms of adequately protecting customer data. Okay. So a simple thing such as doing appropriate security zone profile and getting the technical controls in place to implement that would have completely eliminated the risk of the Facebook Meta tag pixel being the reason that all of that data got breached. Okay. So this is part of the thing where I'm saying that the FTC safeguards is a floor. It is not best practice, because there's no place in the FTC safeguards rule where it talks about having that kind of competency in proactive risk mitigation. Okay, that is the type of stuff that a security professional like myself would come up with. Okay, so now you understand the FTC safeguards rule and the IRS requirements, okay, mandates for if you are a certified, you know, service providing tax preparer, then those things being a floor, you should next know that I would argue most of the tax preparers in the United States are not in truth compliant with these requirements. Clearly, there are going to be people who have engaged in a check the box exercise and something that I'm going to call theater. Okay. They are putting forth the supposition through theatrics that they have these protections and levels of compliance in place. In fact, I've seen some websites of some supposed technology professionals who are attempting to deliver the easy button to tax preparers. Because instead of a tax preparer going to their customers and making an argument that says, hey, we have to raise our prices $200 this year, per filing or whatever the rate is, in order to cover our costs of protecting your customer information. Okay. Nobody wants to do that, apparently. And I think that there is a possibility of a way to do that without losing business. In fact, I would argue that there's a way to do it where you could be advertising as a tax preparer that you are being more competitive because you're actually in a certified way protecting your customers' information, whereas someone who is just engaging in theater in that space is really, nobody should be doing business with them. Okay. Because if they don't have that external certified verification by a certified professional, and I don't mean some other CPA, I'm talking about like a CISO, for example, like a certified CISO who has looked at what those practices are that that organization is doing and is willing to put together a statement that says, yes, I've looked at them, and that they are compliant with not only the letter, but the spirit and the intent of the regulations. Okay. Because an organization can be compliant in a theatric version. Okay, like I'll give you a great example of that. Let's say the IRS plan says that a tax preparer, service provider has to have a system security plan. Okay. Now, they can just pull something off of a template off of the internet and say, this is our system security plan, and it doesn't actually mean anything. It's no different than they can go and pull some template off of the internet for an incident response plan and then say, there you go. We've got an incident response plan. And it's just theatrics. It doesn't actually mean anything because there's no CISO involved. There's no CISO who's listed as their incident commander. They haven't actually done any ransomware response playbooks. They haven't done any incident response playbooks. They haven't done any tabletop exercises. They haven't actually done any training with their staff about what constitutes an incident and what the escalation path is, you know, any of that. Okay. You know, anybody can just go out to the internet and find a template for an incident response plan and create the theater that is, hey, we've got an incident response plan. And it's just baloney, right? It's theater. So until there's an actual real professional who is willing to put their credentials on the line for that organization to say, yes, actually they do have a certified CISO as their incident commander and, you know, yada, yada, all of these other parts. Until that time, well, you know, I'm sorry. I'm just going to believe that it's theater because this is what I see in 99% of the time is theater. There are very few organizations across the board that are doing these things properly. So let's talk about another one. Some of the IRS regs are talking about how a tax preparation service provider has to have policies and procedures documented and trained with their staff, and then they have to have the accompanying technical controls. Okay. So let's talk about the difference between the right way to do that and then theater. And just to recap, theater basically means nothing. It means that they've got maybe 1% better than having nothing. Because if something is theater and it isn't actually fully in effect to the point where whatever that intended thing is actually going to deliver the intended outcome, well, then it's just theater and it's barely better than having nothing. Okay. That's what I'm talking about with regards to theater, right? It's a fiction. It's meant to mislead people and make them believe that there's something there that is meaningful that really is not. Okay. So another good example of that, as I said, is these, you know, policies and procedures and technical controls are all supposed to be in alignment. Okay. But yet what I've seen is I've seen organizations, they will designate an internal person who does not have CISO capabilities or experiences to just go out and, you know, draft these policies. And then they basically self-certify that policy. They don't go through any sort of process to get anybody on the technical side to validate that those policies and procedures are actually in alignment with what the technical controls are or the technical processes. Okay. So there's no alignment. And I'm not against this idea of internal staff who are not technical or who are not a qualified CISO creating the initial draft of policies. I don't think that that's the most fruitful. Because if you talk to a qualified CISO, they are going to have very high quality templates that should just be leveraged. So I actually think that people who sit there and think, okay, well, hey, I'm going to save this money. I'm going to do it all by myself. And then we're not going to have our CISO review this stuff because we don't want to pay that. We're going to save money on that. Well, you're not actually saving money. And I'll tell you why. Because first off, the CISO has already got those templates. Second, the CISO is very experienced at quickly creating alignment between those templates and your particular business. And you as the business organization leadership still have that ability to make additional customizations to it. But you're starting from something that is more correct than had you just gone out to the internet and, you know, pulled some things. And what I've seen in 100% of cases is that when an organization goes and tries to do these policies on their own, and 98% of the time, they don't even have a qualified CISO review those policies. So they're just engaging in theater right there. They're just saying, hey, we've got a policy, we're compliant. No, you don't. You don't have a policy. Because in order for you to have a policy, the policy has to be approved, accepted, implemented, and the technical controls to facilitate it need to be automated. And then furthermore, the fact of the outcomes of those things needs to be reported to the business into an auto-published format in the GRC. This is complicated stuff. It's complicated stuff to people who, you know, don't do that for a living. This is what I do for a living. So for me, it's very quick to do those sorts of things. So you're not saving any money because all that you're getting is actually theater. And the point of those policies and the point of those procedures and the entire reason why the FTC safeguards rules exist, as well as the IRS guidelines on this matter, the whole reason why they exist is because they're trying to get a tax preparing organization to look at these processes and these policies and these gaps in their information security risk management program, assuming they even have one. Okay. Most of the time they don't. Okay. But like to prompt them to work on these things. So, I mean, let's take a little side tangent here. How should you be working on these things? It's actually pretty darn simple. The solution to fixing this problem is actually pretty simple. It's a formula. Step one, get a certified CISO who has the technical capabilities and the technical team backing them to assist you. Step number two, create a budget for this. If it's $2,000 a month, it's $2,000 a month. If it's $20,000 a month, then it's $20,000, right? You decide. But the objective has got to be We're going to work on stuff every single month, continually. We are going to do budget control. We're just going to assign a dollar amount to this, and we're just going to work on it every month. And we're also going to then assign an internal point of contact to work with the CISO on the development of these things and the refinement, review, implementation, yada, yada. Okay. So the formula is find your service provider who's going to help you on the CISO side. The second thing is allocate a budget. And then the third step is assign your own internal point of contact, your own internal champion for that organizational change. And the fourth step is just do it and repeat and rinse and repeat every single month. It's called Kaizen. It's a continuous improvement process. So through this method, you end up with continual progress. You're going to end up being compliant with your cybersecurity insurance requirements. You're going to have significant risk reduction. You're going to have an implementation plan, which is very legally defensible. You will end up with a system security plan. You're going to end up with all the policies and procedures that you should have. And don't think that this is some sort of easy button. It's not. This concept that says you can just go out to a website, you can get some templates, somebody's going to give you a checklist, and then you're going to do it. It's hysterically funny. It's ridiculous. I've literally been a security professional for 30 years. There are no templates for these things or the overall correcting of the gaps in your environment that somebody other than a CISO could actually execute. I've never seen it. And I know a lot of people, and I'm very, very big in the CISO space in the United States. I'm even internationally known. Okay, so like I have a feeling that if it was possible for somebody like a, you know, licensed tax preparer to do this stuff on their own, or really, frankly, any other business unit, business leader sort of person who does not have all of that information technology security architect experience. Okay, if it was possible for somebody else to just do it all by themselves, we would see that level of success out there. But it's not seen. Internationally, it's not seen. And by the way, all the things that the FTC safeguards rule is talking about, the IRS rule is talking about, this has been in NIST for years. It's been part of ISO 27001, the CIS controls. There's like basically enormous overlap in the controls frameworks for good reason, because common sense, best practices, and what is efficacious in terms of practices, policies, techniques, tactics, and technical controls, these are well known. Okay, well known. The world has basically known how to do a lot of these things since at least 1996. You know, I'm not going to say that nothing has changed since then. Obviously, things change every month. But the fundamentals, the core fundamentals, are still the core fundamentals. And the issue is organizations still have not fulfilled the core fundamentals. And unfortunately, they're not taking these requirements of the FTC safeguards rules seriously. They're not taking the IRS regulations seriously. And the end result, in my opinion, is that the organizations that have not taken those things seriously I personally wouldn't do business with them, because I would be very concerned that they do not have the appropriate people, processes, or technical controls in place to appropriately protect my taxpayer information. It's just that blunt. So, and if you think, like, for example, let's say you are a company who has payroll and you've outsourced your payroll to an organization like that. Don't think that you're just going to be able to do what's called a liability risk transfer. Because at the end of the day, it's still your problem. You know, if you hired a payroll processing firm and then they have an incident, and the data that got compromised was your employee data, you may think that you're going to be able to liability risk transfer to the tax prep firm. Maybe you can to a certain degree, but you're still going to have a huge pile of your time consumed dealing with a vendor related breach. It's going to impact your employees, which is going to cause productivity issues for them, stress for them, and they're not going to have respect for your management team that you didn't properly vet a vendor. Right? So vendor risk management is also an art form. There are established, documented processes for what is called TPISRM. You've heard me talk about this before. It's called third-party information security risk management. It is an art form. There are established standards and established processes, absolutely true. However, executing those is quite a bit of an art form. Again, the only people that I've seen do that really effectively are people who have CISO status and who have probably 15 plus years of experience doing exactly that type of thing. So it's an art form because it's not easy at all. I mean, there are some really huge gaps in quite a lot of the public facing resources that I've seen, even the things that come out of CISA, which is the, you know, cybersecurity agency of the federal government. The processes that I follow are processes that are not publicly out there because they're not intended to be, you know, self-help. They're kind of like CISO only processes, right? Okay, so I just want to recap that there is no information on the IRS's website whatsoever that indicates that small tax preparers are exempt from this. I've looked. In fact, their organization, you know, IRS says on their publication 4557 that everybody who has a tax preparer ID number needs to be compliant with these things. And it's that standard thing of if you do your renewal with the IRS as a tax preparer, you have to check the box that says, yes, I fully acknowledge and confirm and affirm that we are compliant with the FTC safeguards rule. Okay. So bluntly, I'm going to say that over 90% of tax preparers are probably not compliant with that. And because it takes a lot of work to get there. And if they have not had an information security risk management program in place for at least the last 3 years where they've been actively working on these things, they're not getting it done. They're not certainly not getting it done in time. And they should have been getting it done starting back in 2019 because, you know, the IRS put this information out in August of 2019. It's not like this is news. You know, this is not a new thing that, oh my gosh, we got to scramble. No, it's just the enforcement arm. And there's some talk about the enforcement of this being outsourced to private parties. And that's going to be interesting. That's going to be real interesting. So, I personally, if I was a tax preparer, I would much rather have a very strong CISO advocate in my corner. Bluntly, it's the same argument that they make for when you get an IRS audit letter, don't try and deal with the IRS on your own. Get your tax preparer, you know, CPA person to help you with that, right? It's so I'm just making the argument in the other direction. You know, please get the proper help. That's it for today's show. Hope you enjoyed it. Please go ahead and send me questions if you have them.